Hey everybody, this is the Bruce Shaman from Crafted For You. Tonight we'll be talking about something that pretty much has taken over my life for at least, you know, the last 5 years or so.
It's the reason we're here.
It is the reason we're here. We're going to be talking about homebrewing. Just a little about myself with homebrewing. I've been doing it, like I said, for about 5 years now. I started... Actually, Chris was there the first time that I actually started.
That was the day we met.
It was, with our friend Stephen Hall. And, man, my system was rinky-dink. I had this little crock-pot, or not even a crock-pot. Yeah, it was a crock-pot.
It was a decommissioned pressure cooker.
A pressure cooker.
Yeah.
And it was probably about maybe like 4 gallons. But that was when I started with extract. So tonight we have somebody who actually just started working for me at Natty's, and he's actually used to work at the Tribe Homebrew. Would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Rob Brown. Yep.
Good.
And yep, I worked at Tribe Homebrew for a couple of months, and now Natty's for a little more than a month, maybe.
Yeah, about a month.
Yep.
So. How did you actually get into homebrewing? Did you, like, somebody get you something, or you just got into craft beer?
Yeah, I've always liked craft beer, and my wife and kids gave me a homebrew kit from Northern Brewer about 2 Christmases ago this year, and I just let it sit in the corner for a long, long time. You know, just for whatever reason, I was just kind of slightly intimidated or didn't have the time. Mm-hmm. And then I got laid off from my previous job at the newspaper.
Okay.
And I said, okay, now it's time to start brewing.
So yeah.
I finally did it.
Absolutely.
Was it something that you had talked to your wife about getting into before, or was it just kind of like a cool gift that she thought you would be into, and she hit the nail on the head?
I think it was probably, yeah, that.
She
and my kids thought it would be a good thing,
yeah,
because, you know, I really did enjoy craft beer.
Right.
And
hopefully they don't regret it yet.
No, not yet.
See, what, as the woman in the relationship who supports the homebrewer, when you support the homebrewer, you get really good beer.
That's true.
And so everybody I don't see why anyone would not support this.
And also, like we were talking about the other night, with having a woman in the house, it sometimes makes your homebrewing stuff look nicer.
Yeah.
Like, case in point, my kegerator. If it was
chalk
me,
paint on
it probably wouldn't look as cool as it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say that's definitely the case. You know, my wife, she's been very supportive through the whole thing.
Right.
But and now I'm also going to Rockingham Community College in the brewing program
right
there. And she, this past weekend, she gave herself for her birthday some shelving to go in my homebrew area. So it was a little more tidy.
Yeah,
and,
that's
organized.
Good. That's good.
That's
like a win-win.
Yeah, that's where we come into play most of the time. Not that women can't homebrew. I'm not saying that at all.
Oh, they totally can.
But that's our
organizational aspect.
Yeah, that's totally my jam.
Like the current state of our closet is just throw everything in there and hope nothing falls out when you open it the next time.
Yeah, and we've been talking in the spring. That is going to be the big spring project that I'm more excited than I should be about figuring out how I'm going to organize that little closet.
Well, if anybody knows anything about Alyssa, is that she loves organization.
Yes. And this was a big opportunity for me. So I had to take it.
So you were talking about RCC. How are you liking that?
I love it. I think it's been great so far.
So anybody who doesn't know, Rockingham Community College here in North Carolina in the town of
Wentworth. Yeah.
They have a brewing and distillation program in which they prepare adults to get into the brewing scene,
the
industry. I did it for about a year, and like I went into it like, man, you know, I know so much about brewing, like I know everything. I go in there, I'm like, I don't know shit about brewing.
I certainly know a lot more now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's really good instructors. I highly recommend this program. If you really want to get into the industry, yeah, this is the best way to do it.
Oh, yeah. It's
so much easier to get a job.
The people are very knowledgeable. I mean, the instructors. Sam Rose is one of my teachers. He's at Pig Pounder. And Todd Isbell down at Liberty in, yep, High Point.
And then... what's her name?
Cindy Vickers.
Cindy Vickers, yeah, is from Miller.
Miller for a long time.
She was quality and...
quality control.
Yeah.
And
yeah, for like 30 years.
Wow. Jeff, how do you think, like, after the year of going to classes, how do you think your, like, recipes have changed? Or do you... I, fortunately enough, have never tried your earlier work.
You came right at the cusp of me going to school.
Yeah, I did. I moved in right after Jeff's first semester, and so I've only ever experienced that homebrew. I've never tried...
I will vouch for Jeff and say that Jeff has always made good beer. But Jeff did, in fact, also used to make bad beer as well.
Okay.
There have been some bad batches.
There's less bad beer now than before. And the quality of the good stuff's gone in, too. But.
Well, that's all part of the learning experience, yeah, and new styles and stuff. But do you think, like, you're more adventurous now, that you know more?
I think I'm more comfortable now. Like, I understand, like, when you first get into home brewing, you're taught all these, like, rules and, you know, guidelines and stuff, but, and you just follow them and not really, like, know why you're doing them. You're just like, I need to do this step and this step and this step. Mm-hmm. But now, like, I know I need to do that, but now I know why,
right,
and what happens during those steps.
And that's important because you have to know the rules to break the rules.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know.
And now, well, both of you, you're both at Natty's, which has a plethora of resources. You're always talking to Scott.
Yeah.
About sours and advice and things like that.
But yeah, I think my my homebrewing has gotten a lot better.
That's good. That's good for me.
Yeah.
That the homebrew gets better. But that just means like you take advice wherever you can find it.
Yeah.
Basically, because you're also always going over to Big Dan's homebrew shop. And asking him advice and texting him and
I
stuff
text
like
him
that.
Like every week, yeah. I definitely I don't care
awesome.
Where like it,
I didn't know you talked to him that much though.
That's oh yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter like where you are in homebrewing. I think you're always still gonna be asking for advice or asking questions. Like even like probably Scott probably still asks people or Big Dan asks people, you know, like to ask people.
I've been amazed at how generous and open people are, you know, when you ask them questions about brewing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I think
it's really great.
I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that everybody likes a second opinion. And I think there's a lot of brewers who take a lot of pride in what they do, so they're more than willing to kind of, you know, talk about it a little bit and show off. You know, I think there's a definite show-off element to it.
Well, I think,
cool.
Yeah, that might be, but, you know, the egos seem to be, I don't know, a little less than what I'm used to in,
yeah,
in, say, photography.
A little more humble.
Yeah. But, yeah, people are they're very generous and kind. And
I think there's a bigger community. Like, we're all in this together just to make great beer. I don't think, like, I've talked to Scott a lot, and, like, you don't want all these breweries putting out bad beer and then, you know, that just brings a bad name on the craft breweries.
Everybody,
if they're putting
right
out this bad beer. So why not help out your fellow
yeah
brewer
yeah
to help, you know,
rising
make something
tides
good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If everybody's making good beer, everyone's winning. So, yeah.
Sorry. That doesn't happen very often.
The dog is distracting.
So, Rob, when did you say you opened up your kit and you started?
It was probably July of this year.
Okay.
And I opened it up, and the Muntin's yeast in there was, it was probably 6 months past, you know, date. And fortunately, it was a liquid extract, and it had been stored in the original box, so no sunlight had hit it hardly. And, you know, I kind of rehydrated the yeast and saw that it was still working. And threw it in there, and it, it took off. It
that was first batch came out good still?
Nut brown ale.
Nice.
Yeah. So I ended up dumping out half of the batch because I was bottling one day when I had to get to class.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be late, and I figured it probably was going to suck anyway. So, so I just went ahead and poured half of it out. And then, you know, a week and a half later, I was like, wow, I wish I hadn't dumped all that out. It wasn't too bad.
It must have been a nice little boost.
It was. But, you know, I think when you homebrew, it's almost like having kids. You know, when you make a beer, it's like your kid. You look past a whole lot of faults.
Yeah,
when it's your own.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, this isn't that good. You're like, this is amazing. I created this. I completely agree. Yeah. I've had that. Where I have this beer and everyone's like, oh, this is kind of okay. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is fantastic. Like,
yeah. Well, you had my flat porter. You know, that's one of those.
It was a good beer. It just didn't carbonate.
It's better than when the opposite happens. When you make something that you know is subpar, and then everybody's just raving about it, and you're like, oh, just take it. Just have
See,
it.
But Jeff gets like that too. Like, you're your
own. Oh, I'm my worst. I'm my biggest critic.
Yeah. Like, so it goes both ways.
Like, I remember back when we were trying to do the whole brewery thing, and I did the three beers for the anti-Valentine's Day show.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, these beers suck. Like, I don't like a single one of them. And
your least favorite was the crowd favorite.
It was.
Yeah.
And what was it?
We did a blonde, we did a black IPA, and we did an amber.
Amber, yeah.
And the crowd loved...
The blonde.
The blonde. The blonde. The blonde.
Really?
It's a lot like Golden.
But it was also... the crowd had like a less developed palate, so I think it might have been just that it was the most accessible beer. Mm-hmm. It was a big part of it.
It was super easy to drink. I think it was like only like 3.5-4%.
Yeah.
And the other ones were like 5%.
And it was like a house party setting, so... Yeah.
It's like perfect when people are guzzling.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I remember like at one point people were like... I'm like... Hey, we're almost out of this.
Adam repped it from stage.
Yeah,
he
goes to the stage and was like, "There's only a little bit more of this beer left. Hurry up and get some."
Nice. So since you opened the kit, Rob, are you still brewing with the kit, or have you?
Yeah, what's your setup
starting
like?
To invest?
Yeah, I did. I've done the ingredient kits. You know, the where you go and you get the BSG kit with all the, you know, steeping grains and extract. That's what I've done so far. But just this past week, I got a cooler with a false bottom, and I got a 70,000 BTU burner. Burner. So
You stepped right up. Like you went from like
it's real exciting.
You went from your stovetop outside with the best equipment.
Oh, because I was having to turn on three burners on the stove and try to simmer
just to get a boil.
Just to get a boil, and then it was just sort of a like it was an okay boil, but it was
at my last place.
To keep it going.
At Addison Point, I'm surprised they didn't ding me for this one. I used to do all grain, and I had, about 8 gallons of my stovetop.
Yeah.
I actually banked the plate on my stovetop. Yeah. And nobody ever said anything.
I got scars on my arm somewhere from hitting it on that pot, trying to carry it around.
I have one
huge,
on me.
Huge, massive pot.
Yeah.
God. Well, Jeff has scars on his shins now from carrying the kettle in.
Yeah, I use a keg as my kettle now, and carrying that thing alone is, a good 20, 30 pounds, plus with 6 gallons of liquid in it.
Yeah.
So we're like shuffling.
Hot liquid.
And that thing bangs into my leg. I'm like,
Yeah.
I'm like, just go, keep going. Just don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I also got a new pot.
You did?
A new kettle.
What size did you get?
I got a 10-gallon.
That's the best one you got, man.
Yeah, Brew Built. And, The bad thing was I realized a couple of weeks ago my son and I were brewing a two-hearted clone.
Yeah.
And I realized that with the ball valve on the kettle, mm-hmm. it wouldn't fit in the kitchen sink anymore. So I thought, oh hell, I've got to figure out a way to chill this down.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I had an old galvanized wash tub, but you know, now the two of us ended up carrying the kettle outside, you know, through the den and past the dogs, and but it seems like it made it okay.
You do what you have to do.
Yeah.
Have you thought about getting a wood chiller?
I did get one too.
Oh, you did buy one.
Good.
Okay, good.
All in.
That is one of the best investments.
One of my favorite early brewing stories was me and Jeff. Man, we crash cooled a beer. It's the first time I'd done it. I don't remember if
it was probably the first one. Yeah.
And we put it in. We went to the gas station. Got a whole bunch of ice, and I filled the bathtub with ice and just cold water, and threw some salt in there to bring the temperature down even farther. And threw it in there. First of all, we were expecting it to just like steam like crazy. It doesn't.
No.
Anti-dramatic.
But what does happen is that water gets real warm real quick, and fortunately he lived right down the street from a gas station, and we went there like four or five times just like, oh, we need more ice, just panicking because we were afraid everything was going to be terrible. And
first time I tried it with just one bag, and I was like,
nope.
Whoops.
Yeah,
should have just tried cold water first and then add the ice later.
Yeah,
because you know then you get a greater chill from your ice. Mm-hmm. You know, you get the better. You can bring
as opposed to all that ice just
lower.
Ice
yeah.
just hitting the sides of that metal and just melting.
Yeah.
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 Well, Jeff, didn't you flood the kitchen the first time you hooked up the wort chiller here? You turned it on
definitely...
and it wasn't hooked up enough.
It doesn't
want
to go on the record.
Oh yeah. I had to Jimmy rig mine because we have one of those weird faucets where it's, I guess it's kind of like the attachment where it comes out, I don't know how to describe
it,
like a hose.
It pulls off the faucet.
So you can't hook up your typical
hose connector
to it, so I have to run something underneath my sink.
Oh, wow.
It's this whole like thing, but I got it to work because I wanted to brew here so bad.
Yeah.
I think there was one time I didn't tighten it enough. But there was one time I walked away from the water. I was filling up a bucket. That was the one time I...
Jeff was filling up the bucket, and I usually, when he, like, has his brew days, I will bake or I will, like, intensively clean. And I had my hands full of something, and I wasn't even looking at the floor. And I walked into the kitchen, and it was splash, 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 splash.
Oh, no.
And I looked down, and there was, like, an inch of water in the kitchen, and this bucket just overflowing with water. And he's outside, da-di-da-di-da, getting ready for beer. Had no idea.
I come back in, she's like, yeah, the kitchen flooded, but I cleaned it up. You're welcome.
Yeah, well.
I kind of did the same thing recently with my bottling bucket. I was going to sanitize it, and so I was trying to fill it up with the water. And I had the nozzle on the counter, facing, instead of hanging over the sink, like it should be, just in case. And, of course, the valve was open, and I had water all over the place. You know, when I came back about 5 minutes later, and had to pull the drawers out of the cabinets and dry them all out.
Oh, no.
The first time we used that wort chiller, we didn't know how it worked. I don't even know if you remember this. And we hooked up half of it. And we were like, oh, I guess this is just how you hook it up. We turn it on. And then we just sprayed water out all over the kitchen floor. That's how we used it. Yeah.
Yes.
We're like, oh, I guess this other end goes back in the sink. That makes sense. Why didn't we think to do that?
Yeah, we're just shooting water everywhere.
No big deal.
What kind of stuff are you looking to upgrade still? Or you kind of have like a system that you think you're super excited about, but like comfortable with for a little bit?
Yeah, I think I'm in pretty good shape to start on all grain. The only thing now probably that I would like to do is probably get a bigger kettle in the future.
Okay.
You know, so I could do 10 gallon batches.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, you're gonna need at least like a 15 gallon like I do.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I'm going to find... Maybe when Jeff upgrades, I'll buy his old kettle.
Yeah, man. I do want to get a nicer one.
That always works. When we got the kegerator, we had a second cooler that Jeff sold to help pay for the upgrades to do, and we pretty much broke even.
Yeah.
We didn't really have to pay anything out of pocket.
Yeah, so imagine this kitchen with two of these chest freezers, oh, one bigger than this one, plus this kegerator in here.
Oh, it was crowded.
It was a little crowded.
It was beautiful.
So yeah. I sold the other one to Matt at Natty's, and then, yeah, we used all that money to buy, like she said, we have a kegerator that she actually had the, it's a full standing, it has a freezer and a refrigerator that she brought when she moved down from Jersey. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that I had to do was buy some faucets and the shanks. I had all the hoses, the regulator, CO2.
Got some cool tap handles.
I do have some, yes, which she bought a couple, yeah, of those.
Yeah. I moved down here almost exactly a year ago. On the 28th of December last year, and I went back up in March to move out of the house and get the rest of my things, and I really wasn't planning on bringing a lot of stuff back, but Jeff caught wind that I had a fridge up there, and it was 3 months into our relationship. I was like, holy crap, I have to find a way to bring this fridge or Jeff is gonna be crushed. He wants a kegerator so bad.
No, that's the dream. I've got a mini fridge that I haven't done anything on yet, because I know I'm gonna have to sawzall in the compressor compartment and patch it up with fiberglass and stuff. The fact that you got just a freestanding fridge that you can just use is amazing.
Well, it's great because we also use the top freezer part for extra meats and stuff.
Yeah, for freezer stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
So it works.
And hops, get more storage.
Yeah, there's a whole ton of hops up there.
Yeah, it's nice having the extra room. That keeps beer out of our regular fridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's never ever beer in our other one. This one's always full of.
So it fits. Have. We have three kegs and just tons of bottles and cans.
Yeah, I was hoping to turn my son, after he moved out of the dorm, he didn't need the little dorm fridge, but it's too small. You know, I can't fit a
that's like what he was saying, the compressors in the back. Yeah. So they're always at home.
I'm fortunate enough that there is, I looked at the schematic and there is enough space between the compressor and the actual compartment, but I've got to take a Dremel or a Sawzall in there and actually just patch over it all with fiberglass, and it's going to be an ordeal. It sucks because it's only an inch and a half shy or something. Yeah, it's a bummer. And most of that's just because the padding they use for the refrigerators is a different kind of it's got a foam core instead of a fiberglass. So if you take that out and replace it with fiberglass,
like
you
a spray foam. Pretty,
yeah. So,
I mean, it was a fun project to put everything together, and it took us maybe a day and a half to paint it and drill the holes and do all of that. So it really wasn't as big of a project as people think it is.
No, we just used a drill with, I don't know what that bit is called. It pretty much
a spade bit?
Yeah, it pretty much just cuts a hole. I just drilled four holes, and then I just put the shanks right in, just took a rubber mallet and just...
Because the important thing was to go one size below, because it gives you a tighter fit.
Right.
We have a friend who did the exact size, and then he had to put a wooden board over because
he has a steel plank in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because the pieces
so you
were
can
loose.
Bolt it on.
Yeah.
Or use a nut on the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because his shanks would actually wiggle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say that sounds like a lot of silicone that you'd have to.
To just.
I've been down that road.
Not a place you want to go again.
No.
But it's super easy. And also, if you ever do it, look up the schematics for your refrigerator, because sometimes, there could be coolant or something in the door. Sometimes.
Oh, yeah. You do not want to let Freon loose in your house.
Yeah,
either.
So make sure there's nothing behind your door.
You especially don't want cold Freon to hit your hand. Mm. Trust me. Do not do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so please do your research.
Practice homebrewing safely and all projects that come with it. Disclaimer that we should put on all of our episodes.
Yeah. You even if you're as safe as possible, you gotta get some battle scars. So.
Yeah.
We all have our own.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any yet.
Just emotional.
Yeah.
Just sometimes a clean house.
Yeah. Exactly. Like last night, you piled all of your dirty homebrew equipment into the bathroom.
False.
Some of it is clean. Fair, but it's piled. And so I went in there and I'm cleaning stuff up. And I was like, can you get some of this stuff out of here? And he's like, oh, I'm so sorry, my homebrew stuff. I was like, I don't give a crap about your homebrew stuff. I need you to clean up the cat bowl. Like, I don't, whatever.
That's normal.
Yeah.
So what kind of stuff do you enjoy brewing?
Well, so far I've only brewed like 4 beers.
Okay.
Maybe 5.
So what kind of things are you looking to brew?
I wanted to make an IPA, so that's the latest that I did.
That was your 200, right?
200.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is still sitting. It's got dry hops in it now.
Yep.
And you know, I'm waiting for it to settle a little more. And also waiting for my kegerator to arrive so I can go ahead and cold crash it and keg it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm real excited about that.
I was gonna say, are you excited for that?
Yeah, I'm very.
I'm so jealous that you had the ability to ramp up so quick.
Well, I was a photographer, mm-hmm. or you know, still do, but sold off a little bit of photography equipment.
Okay,
and
yeah.
And so photography equipment is the one thing that costs more than brewing equipment.
Yeah, I bet.
So, you know, I was able to make that move pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's nice.
Recently, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, mine was slow.
We had so much jerry-rigged nonsense and like weird things that we got good at doing. Like, because he was talking about dry hopping, it just made me think about the spoon and the strainer trick.
Oh, my goodness. No, that wasn't even dry hopping. That was
what's
just...
What's that?
Yeah, so with when we had our first pot... The first time I upgraded, I think I got a like 8-gallon pot. I still have it, but it doesn't have any ball valves or anything on it, so we pretty much have to siphon out
right,
of
okay,
it.
Oh, right, okay, yeah, yeah.
Or we would just take a pitcher and...
and one pitcher at a time,
it out.
Yeah.
Pour it through a strainer.
Pour it through a strainer.
But then we found out that the hops were coming through the strainer, so we had to put a piece of aluminum foil inside of that and poke holes in that.
Oh, man.
So it would be smaller.
Strain it.
But then the hops would clog it up, I had to stand there with a spoon and keep stirring it while he was pouring it so the holes would stay clear. We got, like, real good at it, but it was just totally superfluous and not necessary. But we did it for, like, a year.
For quite a few but yeah, like my system, I was really slow into. I don't think I did extract very long because I immediately was just like, man, this is so expensive. Like,
no, the extract didn't last long at all.
Buying those cans are like $15 a pot,
yeah.
And you have to
yeah.
have at least 2 cans per.
I may be wrong, but I think the last extract beer was the vanilla stout.
I think you're probably
I think
right.
That's awesome. That's pretty real, yeah.
And then I was just like, we gotta upgrade this. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to just the big price difference in ingredients.
Oh, you will.
Yeah.
Like I could do a batch now, probably for a couple bucks. Like the perks of working at Natty's, I get my grain, and then some of my yeast. I'll get there too. But then, like, if I just want to do some weird hops or weird yeast. That's
yeah.
really the only thing. So that's
bucks,
just like
yeah.
$15 or so for a brew, as opposed to, I know at one point I was doing batches for like
the price of 3 beers.
$50.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
My most expensive one was like $70. I did like a double IPA and I used like a pound of hops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that stuff adds up quick.
It does.
Yeah,
$2.50
yeah,
an ounce.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
yeah.
Plus I had a ton of. I think it was probably like. 8 or 9%.
I remember
so.
Wasn't there? I feel like there was an IPA that we were estimating at like something like $90+ for a batch.
Ooh,
right?
It was the double.
Wow.
It was like
it was 70
something.
Yeah, yeah.
High 70s.
Jeez.
And then we dry hopped it too, so it was expensive.
Yeah, it was nuts.
It was really good though.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
There you go.
It was a Green Flash clone.
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. Still cheaper than the cost of the equivalent amount of beer.
Probably.
So
that is one good thing
probably,
about homebrew.
Yeah.
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 And I think that's what some people look at.
Well, that's why most people get into it, right?
I would
not
say
most
yeah.
people, but probably 50-50, I think.
People are like, oh man, I can make beer for probably
I can
about
make
the same
better
price.
Beer for the same price.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's how I started looking at it. Like, man, I can make whatever I want, and it's probably just as good, if not better, than some commercial breweries.
Yeah, it takes a while before you overtake the cost of starting up, though, you know?
The initial cost is expensive.
That is true.
And when I was working at Triad Homebrew, I would tell customers, I said, eventually your beers won't cost $7 a piece.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're gonna end up paying for that equipment, and, you know, you'll see the savings eventually. But
yeah.
Right off the bat, yeah, that's some expensive beer.
Yeah, I definitely sunk probably, this is just an estimate, but probably like over $1,500 into like brewing equipment. Easily.
But then how much have you saved on beer over the years?
Oh, well,
At this point. An immeasurable amount. Right?
The last thing I bought was that six pack of High Pitch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, from High Wire. And then previously, we buy beer maybe once in a blue moon.
You guys pretty much only buy beer out, right? Like,
yeah, we're at a
anything
bar.
You buy is just to try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll go to like Total Wine or something and just pick up singles to try things.
Yeah.
But we usually don't buy a six pack of anything, really.
No, not usually. Unless it's the only way we can get something.
Yeah. Unless it's not at like Total Wine or something like that.
But you said, Chris, just now about one of the reasons people get into it. I could see a lot of people getting into homebrew for the same reason people like to bake or cook.
Yeah,
like
as a hobby.
As the hobby and like enjoy, like not just enjoying the final product, because everybody enjoys drinking a good beer.
Right.
But that whole process of creating a recipe and doing the calculations, and Jeff, you can spend how long creating a recipe?
I spend weeks sometimes. And
yeah.
It's really something that I really want to nail.
And doing the research and stuff, but I'm the same way when it comes to when I want to bake a cake or do something. I look at a ton of different recipes, and then I mod podge something together, and I try it, and then I try it again.
That's exactly how I'm
And I think I think for me, I guess I just didn't at the onset, I didn't fully grasp how much depth there could be to that element of it, or at least how much I would enjoy that element of it. You know, at first it was just like,
I noticed that right away.
And there's cool stuff you can do, and you know there is, obviously, because there's very complex beers and stuff, but it doesn't seem like it should be as interesting as it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is, though.
Especially like, and it's got the added piece, like baking has a little bit of chemistry, but beer has a lot of chemistry.
Lot of it.
Which is cool.
You can make the same like beer with the same like malt, but like, change the hops, change the yeast.
You can just change your hop schedule.
Yeah, it's
super easy.
Different
beer.
Yeah.
Well, the cool thing was at one of the rallies over in May, they did exactly that.
Yeah, they all had the same malt build, but they all had a different hop.
Yeah. So how many beers or how many people do you think?
There was over 20. Because, like, they hit the big hops. It was, you know, Centennial, Citra, Chinook, you know, the big C's and everything.
Yeah.
But then there were some really weird ones. Like, I never had lemon drop before.
The lemon drop was really good.
And lemon drop is fantastic.
Yeah, so imagine going to a rally and you see these people had done 20 individual brews. Everyone brought in their keg. And were giving out samples. And you could just go from table to table and right after another try different variations of somewhat the same beer and see how the different hops changed.
And just see what that hop actually tastes like.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really cool.
They weren't smashed.
So you said
beers,
each beer was a different hop in the same malt build?
Same malt build.
Yeah.
See, because I like to, and this is what's so cool, I get really nerdy about the idea of like changing just one element to see like what the thing tastes like. But I would love to even see, you know, people with the same build changing hop schedules and temperatures and more technical things like that, so that you can get a more well-rounded feel for what a specific hop could taste like. So like Centennial, like what if I use Centennial as an aroma? What if I use Centennial as a bittering hop? Like that's traditionally maybe not how you use it, but like just being able to get that full depiction of like how well-rounded an ingredient can be is like that's fascinating to me.
Well, I've been to a couple of years ago. I went to Powder Flipper again. I went to Battleground Brewers Guild here in Greensboro, and you went to a
I
couple
went
of
too.
Games.
I went, yeah.
And I remember them doing like competitions where they would tell everybody exactly the same malt and the same hops and the same yeast, mm-hmm. and they say, you figure out your hop schedule.
So they did do something like
they
that.
They did then. Do something okay. like that. And then enter them and they judged accordingly.
Yeah.
I just read an article in a magazine about five different homebrewers who had different equipment setups but tried the same ingredients, and you know how their efficiencies changed through each system. And one was like a brew in the bag kind of guy,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and the other, you know, one guy got something crazy like 93% efficiency.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and most of the others
were crap out of it. You can't remember it. Yeah.
But yeah, he had probably the most elaborate system out of all the other guys. But yeah, it was just kind of interesting. I kind of skimmed it just the other day.
And that's crazy to see that just same everything and same doing everything, but your systems are just slightly different.
Yeah.
You can get different efficiencies. The beers probably tasted different.
Yeah, one guy didn't even have a wort chiller. He just let it cool.
That's scary.
Sticking out of the snow. Yeah.
He didn't even do that. It just sat there. And
wow.
That takes a patience, takes a long time.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. Maybe he's trying to create a sour.
Yeah, I'm sure he's probably getting some wild yeast.
Yeah, something. Something's good. Jeff, I got a question for you, since this is the Humber episode. Because we don't talk about Humbering a whole lot. You know, we try people's Humber and stuff, but what benefits do you see to homebrewing over commercial brewing, if any? Because we talk a lot about the opposite, and people think about the opposite. Like, oh, it's a commercial system, you get...
Good question.
You know, but do you see anything that lends itself... Any techniques or anything that lend themselves better to homebrewing than they do to commercial brewing? Or are there any advantages to that?
Commercial over homebrewing?
No,
homebrewing over commercial.
Right, because obviously there's an endless laundry list of advantages of commercial brewing over homebrewing. But what things do you feel like are maybe like easier to take advantage of, or different things you can do? I don't know, any advantages that homebrewing would have over commercial brewing?
I would say probably just experimentation as one huge thing,
right.
And then because like with I guess you can do it commercially, but it's a lot easier doing it.
You do get better iteration in homebrewing,
yeah.
Generally,
and just with a homebrew, you could. Do smaller batches and then really hone in on something. Because, we always talked about doing, do 5-gallon batch, but then splitting it all up.
Right,
do different yeasts and stuff like that. So on a smaller scale, you don't have to, use as much money. But it's a little easier to experiment, I think. Because, that's what we do at Natty's. We have essentially what I have. And that's how we do our small little test batches.
Okay.
That way you can kind of scale up.
Right.
So it's easier for experimentation. That's one big thing that I see.
Okay.
I'm not sure what else.
I would say after a day of putting thousands of beer bottles in boxes, not as many bottles to put in boxes.
You did about 45,000 bottles today.
Not myself. Not alone. No. Although at one point it felt like it.
Trying to think what else would be better on a small scale system.
I wish I could help you answer the question.
I know. I'm legitimately thinking, that's a tough question. Man, there's not too many things. It's like when you have the bigger systems, you have so many toys.
Right. And there's other obvious things like you're brewing for yourself.
Sure.
And you can be, mm-hmm. you can make whatever the hell you want, and you're not wasting money, and you can just dump it out if it sucks. I don't know.
Smaller things.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing is accidents are cool.
True.
And being able to have accidents and have those happy accidents is really cool. So I think sometimes
tell us about one you had.
Well, I'm trying to think of a beer that we've had where it was like, the gravity came out wrong or something, or the flavor didn't come through as much and ended up tasting good still.
I can think of one of Jeff's accidents when it came to measuring out his grain.
That's a perfect example.
That is a good one.
That's a perfect example.
So We have grain scales, and I guess we use them for hops too, at Natty's. And so there are two different scales on there. One is for kilograms and one is for pounds. Well, first time I ever did it, I was measuring my Pilsner malt, my two-row, and what I thought was 10 pounds, or maybe I'm doing it backwards. Anyway.
10 kilos would be 22,
there you
over
go.
22 pounds. Yeah.
Exactly.
So I think I was measuring like 8 pounds, which ended up being like 16. I guess it's almost double.
Yeah.
And then I'm going through my whole thing, and I take my gravity at the end, and I was like, man. Either I had really good efficiency or I fucked up or something. And I'm thinking, like, man, I can't
figure
out.
Also, Jeff throws a party, doesn't tell anybody because he hasn't figured out what the problem was yet. And
I didn't figure it out.
All this beer is supposed to be 5%. So everybody's like, okay.
It ended up being
9% beer.
Ooh, yeah.
So everybody's drinking two beers for the price of one all night.
Yeah, we got wasted.
That was a good party. We drained that keg.
We drained the keg all night. It was the ginger.
It was supposed to be, I pretty much took the Southern Pale Ale recipe, and I was just going to add ginger, so it was a ginger pale ale.
Mm-hmm.
And it tasted great.
It was delicious.
A little bit of alcohol. But for the longest time, I was like, man, like, because I milled it at Triad, and I was like, man, somebody must have left, like, grain or something in the bucket.
Yeah.
Because that's a completely plausible thing that somebody just left it there.
And then maybe
what?
2 or 3 months later, in the middle of the day, I'm at my desk at work, and I get a text message from Jeff, and it just says, I figured it out. And I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? And he goes, kilograms. And I go, oh.
Yeah. I fucked that up.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, the first batch I did, you know, I told you I dumped half of it out. Well, I dumped half of it out before I put the priming sugar in. So I put enough priming sugar in to put out a batch. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't even think about it. And then probably about 2 nights later, I was lying in bed, and, you know, in that 3 minutes it takes me to fall asleep, I went, oh shit. And all I could think about was that Breaking Bad episode where Walter White's beers were blowing up in his garage.
So you started like listening for gunshots. Like.
And so the first thing I did when I woke up the next morning was go down and pried one of the caps off to see how it was doing. And boy, it was like, shh. And I said, okay,
we're
going in the fridge. So yeah, I put them in the fridge that day.
Yeah,
and they were okay. They went fast. But
so the logical transition here, I don't think we talked about this. Have we talked about that on the podcast? I don't remember.
About
I
what?
Think we have about the top blowing off of the honey porter. Did we talk about that?
Yeah,
no.
I talked about that.
Okay, I think that's the logical transition.
Bottle bombs.
Yes,
well,
I did the.
This is Chris's favorite story.
I love this. I love
so we
this.
Did.
It's so great.
So like 2 years ago, I guess it was when Obama had the whole like beer recipes come out.
Yeah,
I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna try
we
one
made
of these.
It. Yeah.
So it was
which also it was extract. The recipe was extract.
Yeah, I had to kind of.
So we had to convert it to
a grain.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
For some stupid reason. But yeah, so we converted it to a grain, and it was a honey porter, and I did normal everything, and this is the point in time when I was living at my parents'. No, I was living at a different place, but I didn't have any place to store my carboy, so I left it at my parents', like, outside closet, and
which meant you couldn't check on it like a newborn.
Yeah, I couldn't do like how I do here, like every 5 minutes checking it.
Yeah.
And then also, like, 30 minutes after he leaves for work, before I leave, he texts me and then asks me to check.
There's sometimes I do that. So I come back like 2 days later, and I take a look at my carboy, and the bung isn't there, the airlock isn't there, and I'm looking up, and there's beer on the ceiling.
Everything is sticky. It's like a 3x3 closet,
yeah.
And it's just coated in stick.
I find the airlock still connected to the bung, but it's shattered. It's like it's in a million pieces at this point. I'm like, what the hell happened? So I guess the excess amount
shot off the carboy, hit the ceiling, and just shattered.
Because we use honey, like
right
at. At fermentation.
Yeah, so the extra sugar in the honey must have just put it over.
So that's why you use a blow off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I bunged it back up. I used a blow off and
gave a few bottles to people before we told them what happened, and they said it tasted good. We're like, okay. So it was good. It came out well. Yeah.
But yes, that's exactly why you want to use a blow off. I pretty much do a blow off.
That was the same beer that we crash cooled in the bathtub.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, so that beer was especially difficult the whole way through.
The whole thing.
That was a difficult time in homebrewing.
The dark period.
That was the dark ages of homebrewing. It was very primitive times.
I'm sure you learned a lot, though.
Yeah, and that's a great thing about, I think, when you're starting homebrewing, is to start, you know, small. Because you're more humble then. Like, you really appreciate your systems, and you don't jump into it. Like, I know some people have... You know, the three vessel system, and they have the pumps, and they have everything. Yeah. Everything's electronic, and they just like press a button and it does it. I think learning mistakes is what makes you a really good brewer.
And I think any new hobby you take on that's as involved as that, like knowing, being able to make something exceptional on equipment that is beneath that product. Makes it so that you're paying so much attention to detail and you're absolutely on top of everything so much that when you get the nicer equipment, you're just spoiled. You don't skip that step. It's not just like, because you can be one of those guys that we were talking about. Automated brewing systems?
Oh, yeah, no, we just talked about that between us.
Yeah.
Oh, like the grandfather?
Yeah, like you can have an automated brewing system and you don't know anything
What's
about
the
what
fun of that, right?
You know? Yeah. And so just being that hands-on helps keep the whole process.
I don't remember what
It makes you appreciate the whole process of the end product better. It makes you prouder.
I
think I'm gonna keep my plastic fermenter.
Yeah.
You know, the 6.5 gallon bucket.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep it forever. Just, you know.
Because that's what started.
I still have my original bucket. Yeah. And actually,
that was
my
the first
original,
thing to get swapped out, right?
No, the original bucket. So, anytime when you buy those homebrew kits, you get
that. Oh, was that the one we broke the nozzle on?
Yeah, you get those cheap little plastic nozzles. We probably broke them like 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
I was tightening it up.
Yeah, and you just,
and you just bam.
Just turn it off and off, you kind of twist it.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, screw this. I'm not paying $5 every time for a new one. We go to Lowe's Home Improvement. And we were like, hey, dude, we're looking to do this. How can we do it? And he's like MacGyvering this whole thing.
Like 8 little pieces that just got twisted together. He's like, is this what you need? Like,
and we spent like $5 on
$5. And it's huge. And it's like for an industrial like sprinkler system.
Oh, cool.
Dude, it's awesome. It was great. It's so much better than the...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Look at that carbonation.
A little. Yeah.
No, it's great. So,
you brought over
some homebrew.
Yes, I did.
Do you want to tell us about this?
This is a kit beer. It's an oaked imperial stout actually it's an imperial stout that I oaked. I got some oak chips.
Okay.
And I soaked them in some Larceny bourbon for about a week. And I'd say I probably used about, I don't know, 4 ounces of oak chips.
Mm-hmm.
And then threw them into the secondary fermentation and let it sit for about 8 or 9 days after that before bottling.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
It smells great.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, that's fantastic, dude.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it's really oaky.
Oak really comes through.
That's
like,
nice.
Like, I've done beers like that, and I never really get that much oak.
I don't know if the bourbon helped release some of the oak in it, but,
No, this is.
I think I can taste a little bit of the bourbon in it too.
I hope so. A little bit. I
mean, on the back. A little bit.
Bourbon kind of gives it a little more sweetness, I thought.
Yeah.
And what's the alcohol?
And the aroma. The alcohol on this is about. I didn't have as good of a. My starting gravity was lower than I'd hoped.
Okay, efficiency was a little low.
Yeah, the efficiency was a little low, and I think that's because I tied the grain sack for the steeping grains a little too tightly.
Okay.
So there was enough surface area for them to get soaked?
Yeah. So it finished up about 1064, I think it was.
Then what'd you get it down to?
I got it down to 1010.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
So, I don't know calculation, but that's probably at least like 7-8%.
Yeah, I think it's probably a little over 7.
So you said, what was the equipment that you used to do this? You said you used a sack.
This, yeah, I had my old pot, which was just a 6-gallon cooking pot.
Okay.
And I put the, used one of the socks, you know, for the steeping grains. Uh-huh. And this was the BSG oaked Imperial Stout Kit, I think it was. Okay. That's what it was. That's what it changed. The oaked Imperial Stout Kit came with oak powder.
We talked about this the other day.
Yeah, and the oak powder looked like basically a bag of charred splinters. And I didn't feel good about putting that in there.
That's a little scary.
How am I going to get that out of there?
So that's weird.
I swapped it out for chips.
Okay.
And the chips worked a little better, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an improvement. I wouldn't even say this is a kit. Like, this is...
No, that's, oh, that, cool. that, that's why fantastic. I was asking, because this is fantastic for a kit beer.
Well, thanks.
Especially because this was extract, right? This wasn't all grain at all.
It was extract. So with steeping grains.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of those kits are... They're kind of... When I was at the home brew store, you know, I would tell people they're kind of bulletproof in a lot of ways. You know, they've got the specific instructions, and, you know, they're kind of hard to screw up.
Well, they're tried and true. Like, that's why they're selling them like that, because they know they work.
Yeah.
Well, so it's just a good way to get into it, to get your feet wet, if you're not starting out, like, side by side with someone who's more experienced.
Yeah.
So you can kind of hold your man through
it.
Yeah, like, when I first started, I worked at Triad for a little bit. And I would push those. Like, if people are just getting into, like, homebrewing, I'd be like, try the kit before you go and spend...
Definitely, yeah,
you know,
$400 or
$500 on this, you know, mash tun and kettle and all this huge equipment.
Yeah.
You know, just go over there, get up, you know, do you have a pot at home? Do you have something to hold maybe, like, 6 or 7 gallons? You know, and then buy this kit... And get a bucket, and you're pretty much good to go.
Yeah, and you can make 4 or 5 gallons of beer.
Yeah, just get some bottles. You know, have your friends drink some beer, and then clean the bottles out. And
you know, you also figure out if you like the process, start to finish, for the most part, before you invest all that money.
That's also funny because we work with this girl, Cheryl, and her husband has wanted to get into homebrewing, and like. We talked about it, and then, like, he went to Big Dan's and stuff, and he's like, man, I don't want to do this. This is too much cleaning. Because pretty much homebrewing is cleaning. Like,
Yeah.
I would say at least 70% of
clean everything
is
twice.
Cleaning.
You say that all the time. Yeah. You say 70% of my life is cleaning equipment.
It really is, because you got to clean it, and then you got to sanitize it.
Yeah.
So what was, if you don't mind me asking, do you know how much that kit cost if people want to buy it at home?
Yeah, this kit was, I think it retailed up at the homebrew store for about $54.
Okay. What was it called one more time?
Oaked Imperial Stout.
Okay.
It's a BSG.
Okay.
Not the better beer, but one of their kits.
Cool.
In a black box.
So if you guys want to drink along at home, you can make your own.
But don't use the oak powder.
Don't use the oak powder.
Yeah, the chips were only about $3.95 a bag. So, you know,
Powder just sounds
weird.
Wrong.
It's just
Yeah.
I don't want any part of that.
No.
Yeah, you just get a little bit in your bottle and you're like, this is really gritty. What is this?
It was finer than sawdust. So, you know,
weird.
That's no way. I don't want splinters in my throat.
That's
I'm sure most of it would settle in the yeast, but or whatever.
Perhaps,
well, no, because you probably put it in right at bottling, right?
You put it in secondary.
No, I put it in secondary.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did the powder call for secondary?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's still kind of scary.
But soaking it in the bizarre bourbon, I think was that was.
That's a good call. That's a good call. It helps. Yeah. It helps pull a lot of the flavor out of it. I mean, I like adjuncts and liquor just go so well together.
Mm-hmm.
It does.
I'd be interested to try it without the bourbon just to see,
what
the difference is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Maybe I'll go up and get another kit.
Yeah.
Try it again.
So what do you think about brewing next? Like, do you have anything going right now?
I would like to, I've got the two-hearted that I need to keg. The two-hearted clone. And,
I'm interested in trying that when you're ready, because Jeff did a two-hearted clone over the summer, actually.
Yeah.
And it came out.
It was really good. Yeah, I really liked it. I don't think it was as close.
Yeah.
It wasn't as close.
I think they were different beers.
Kind of better.
I liked it more, too.
We did a blind test and everyone liked Jeff's better.
Had a little bit
that's
more.
Good. That's
had a little
good.
Bit more balance to it.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit more malt, not quite as sharp.
Yeah, this one's got like 6 ounces of Centennial in it.
Yeah.
So, it's going to be pretty hoppy. I tasted it the other day. I took a gravity reading and tasted it, and it's pretty bitter.
That's good.
So I like that. But next, I think I just want to do something. I'd like to make an ESB.
Yeah, okay.
ESBs are fun.
ESB was one of my first, it was one of those beers where, I drank it when I went to London one time, and I went, it's like, wow,
this is what beer
stuff.
This is
what it's all about.
So, I would like to be able to make a good ESB. And
what would you
plus go? My wife likes, she's not very, very much into the hoppier beers.
Right.
So,
I was about to say, like, commercially, how would you want yours to taste? Because I've had some ESBs that are actually quite hoppy. And you want yours more to be like more English?
I think, English style. I would like to make an English style ESB. I don't mind it being a little more bitter.
Yeah.
And I think I can sneak a little bit more bitterness in there, perhaps.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could, because like I was telling you at work, like, the Maris Otter is one of the big malts that you use in there. And it makes it a really malty beer, so I think you can hide some hops behind there.
Yeah.
And it turns out really good.
I mean, it's called the extra special bitter, so
it should
be bitter.
It should be bitter.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure stylistically it's probably about 40 IBUs, somewhere near a pale ale.
Nice. You might not be at this point yet, but Jeff certainly is, where he keeps a whiteboard of a brewing schedule with beers he wants to do. And he has maybe?
It's probably about 10 beers
about
on there.
10 beers on the schedule.
Wow.
Yeah, what is next?
Next, I want to do a Ruthless Rye from Sierra Nevada, kind of a clone like that. And then, hopefully, we have that Saison on blackberries in there. I'm going to give that a try this week and see how that tastes. And if that's ready to go, I'm going to put that in bottles, and then we can get another sour going.
We have some cool stuff going on. We just kegged the Goza last night.
Yeah, the Goza's in there. Maybe we'll try that after.
You're making... Oh, it's in there?
Yeah, we can try it.
Oh, I was going to say, you're making me sad because there's nothing written on that freezer door right now.
There's a keg of Goza in there.
And we're doing a blackberry cider over the weekend.
We are.
I am amped.
I am so excited.
Dude.
Cool.
I
are you getting, how are you doing it with the blackberries? Are you
we're gonna do the traditional kit from the I can't remember the name of the brand, but we'll do it on secondary, so we'll transfer it over to another carboy, let it age a little bit, let the yeast eat up all the extra sugars and stuff, and then probably like a week or two, and then throw it back in a keg. Should turn out really good.
Brewer's best.
I think we're just gonna do the standard apple. We don't wanna do anything crazy.
Yeah.
So the blackberries shine a little bit more than the apple, and I think that's a more clean slate.
So you're doing a blackberry with an apple cider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, okay. But the blackberry is gonna completely take over the beer.
Overtake the apple.
Was that how you did the last one, the cherry one?
No, that was a cherry
can. That was just a cherry can. Okay.
And we only put maybe an eighth of the sweetener that they give you.
The back sweetener, aspartame, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't put very much in it because
we're not a huge fan of it. We like dry. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was still kind of slow. I guess some people like that real woodchuck candy beer kind of.
Yeah, and that is not my jam.
It was the cherry, I think, that made it. And it was really in the beginning, it was very medicinal.
It really was.
It was. Medicinal. It was. That was the that was the one I called the vomit beer.
Yeah. That you kind of liked it, but it was weird.
Yeah, it had a weird aftertaste. That fortunately phased out with some aging.
Yeah. We're going to also try a dry hop cider and a ginger pear. We're going to take the pear kit and add fresh ginger to it.
I would like to try that with the cider, like dry hopping. I think it would be...
Oh, we've had a couple. I don't know if you've ever been to Asheville a lot,
mm-hmm.
but there's a place called Urban Orchard.
Okay.
And it's a cidery.
I haven't been there.
They make a really good dry hop cider.
Hmm.
And that's where we got the idea for the blackberry cider.
One of the best ciders I've ever had was from there. And I think actually the best... I've had a few different ginger ciders. The best I had was from Raleigh Brewing Company.
Hmm.
May, when we were there for the rally. That was the
ginger
best
cider
one.
Sounds good. I'm gonna drink more cider.
I love cider.
There's some really good ciders out there.
Read another article about using Brett in cider.
That's what we did at work.
Yeah.
That's what Scott did with the kits. Oh, okay. Brett in it.
That's cool.
I can see that.
At Urban
like
Orchard.
A really tart cider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We had a soured apricot. Granny Smith. We had a soured apricot cider. Ooh.
That was actually really good.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're doing some really good stuff there. If you've ever been to Asheville, I would definitely check them out. They're a little on the outskirt, just barely.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's worth awesome. Like the 5-minute drive.
And what's the name again?
Urban Orchard.
Urban Orchard, okay.
Yeah they check always them out. Do different things.
Yeah, every time we've been there, it's a different hop they use in their dry hop.
Hmm.
I think the last time it was Hollertau.
They've used Galaxy.
They used Galaxy.
Galaxy would be a lot.
Galaxy
more,
was really good.
That would be jacked up a little bit, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was
that's
really
about
tasty.
15
IBUs
or AAUs.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
They're not afraid to experiment with their ciders and do different outlandish things.
There's really so much experimentation.
They do like dry ones. They do a habanero one.
Yeah.
Habanero cider.
Try the habanero cider.
It mixes really good with their cranberry.
Habanero. So they make, I feel like we talked about this maybe on the last episode, but the habanero cider is like a habanero cider, not like habanero apple cider.
They
take their base cider and then they pretty much dry hop it with
a...
If you took enough
like
habanero juice to...
Yeah, no, that would be crazy. But I was going to say, if you made like a pineapple cider with some habaneros in
it. That would be really good. And I think it would balance it really well. The one they have is a little too much.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just for me, because I'm not...
Even me. I like spicy stuff, and it was hot.
Yeah, but our server, when we ordered the flight, said, drink a little bit, and then do a splash of your cranberry cider in there. And it was awesome because the sweetness like really cuts it like in the perfect way.
Mm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then I think going back to like what we're brewing, we also want to do a golden sour and we want to use apricots in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, when you do new sours, do you, these are obviously kettle soured or?
No, I'm doing it. You're legit.
Wow.
Okay. I'll do like. We have a Flanders going right now.
Since March.
And I did the Roselaire blend from Y Yeast. So that's got lacto-PDO and Brett in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then with the Saison, I used the Farmhouse 3711 from Y Yeast. I know the strain.
No, I'm just laughing because you used to tell me that lagers took too long.
Oh, Severus Reaver.
Well, true. But they also tie up.
No, I know they take up space. Razor. I understand.
But then with that one, I let it pretty much get really low, and then I threw Brett Lambicus on it and let that age for about 3 months.
Yeah.
And then we threw it on blackberries.
Wow.
We're really, yeah. So my most anticipated beer coming up is going to be the Lime Basil Saison that I have wanted since
since the rally.
Okay. Yes, when we went to the Raleigh, we went to the Raleigh Brewing Company. They hosted a rally. Raleigh. they actually did a homebrew competition, and there were probably like maybe 10 beers to try.
At least.
The best beer I had had in a long time was from that competition, and it was a basil lime saison, and it was delicious.
Yeah, I know, it was fantastic. I really liked the one dude had, he called it the kitchen sink IPA. So he pretty much took all the hops that he had in his refrigerator and made an IPA.
Nice.
Which you had done, you called your greens mutiny. Right, you basically got
No,
the Greens Mutiny. The Greens Mutiny was my first IPA that I did when I worked at Natty's.
Okay,
so I went overboard.
That's right. Yeah, no, that's what I thought it was, because it was called Greens Mutiny because it was all the Natty Greens stuff.
It was
stuff
all the Natty, but you still just took a whole bunch of hops.
I probably used over a pound.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
What's that? I can just do this now? Cool.
I can take all the hops I want. I'm gonna dry hop the fuck out of this thing.
Yes. And I named that beer.
You did. Because I was like, man, I want something, you know, like revolting and stuff. Because Natty Greens is all like colonial. And, yeah.
Yep, mutiny.
So mutiny is a good one.
Speaking of hops, I have a homebrew question here, and you know, not being very experienced, my two-hearted clone is still got dry hops floating on the top. Now, if I cold crash this, is it gonna? Are the hops gonna settle down? They'll settle down.
But the thing about cold crashing, if you're still bottling,
yeah,
is
I'm not gonna bottle.
Oh, you're not. Oh,
no, I'm in a keg this time.
So the first time,
your sediment's gonna stay in the keg anyway, right?
Well, yeah. When you cold crash, pretty much your yeast, hops, everything's gonna fall. Your beer will brighten up. It's pretty much like a bright tank commercially.
Yeah.
But the bad thing is, if you're still bottling, you're gonna kill all your yeast.
Yeah.
And the yeast is what creates your carbonation.
Yeah.
But you're gonna be kegging
first time.
So
that's exciting.
It is.
Just crash it. Leave it about, like, you can freeze beer, and I have frozen beer.
Yeah.
So be very careful. It doesn't freeze until about 28, 29. Keep it in, like, the mid-30s.
Yeah.
Keep it in the mid-30s, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Keep it away from your sanitizer. If you have sanitizer, like a blow-off. Don't put a lot in the cup or whatever.
You don't want any Star San IPA.
Yeah.
No.
Because it will just, as soon as it gets cold, it'll suck it right up.
Yeah.
But yeah, you should be fine. Just throw it in your keg. And it's actually, it will carbonate faster because it's colder.
Yes.
It will dissolve more into solution.
CO2, being colder. Yeah.
Are you going to force carb? Or are you doing natural carbonation?
Force carb, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So just hook it up to the beer line.
Mm-hmm.
Put it at like 30 for like 2 days. You're good.
Awesome. I can't wait. That's my Christmas present this year.
Yeah, bring some by. Bring some to work.
I will.
Just fill up like a little growler. I'll bring you a growler.
Okay.
That'd be great.
You have the cool Natty's growlers with the extra saying on the back or whatever.
I have the old school ones.
Oh, those are old? Okay.
Yeah, it still has Nathaniel Green on it.
Yeah.
Oh, instead of the hop.
Yeah, I don't have any of those. But yeah, I think that pretty much wraps it up for our homebrew episode. If you have any questions, you know, hit us up on any of our social medias.
Craft it for you on everything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No underscore. Are there underscores?
There's underscores on everything except Facebook.
So crafted_for_you on Twitter.
Instagram.
Untapped.
Okay. Yeah. We are on all of them.
And then cool. Facebook.com/crafted for you.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
And then we're on iTunes. Please subscribe.
Rate and comment if you feel so inclined.
Would be wonderful.
That helps out a lot.
We are currently working on merchandise right now. Chris,
we
is,
are.
We have a logo now. We printed a couple t-shirts.
We got a few t-shirts.
Yeah. Trey, our graphic designer and very good friend, was here last night mocking up some business cards for us.
And it looks so good.
Yeah. So we have some really, really fun stuff coming up. If you have any questions, like Jeff said, just get in touch with us.
We're giving out buttons for free. If anybody sees us and they want a button, ask and we'll get a button.
Stickers. We're going to have stickers.
We are. Very, very soon. Yes.
And if anybody ever wants to come on an episode, let us know too.
Also,
very happy.
If you're listening to this and you don't know us and you want to come on to an episode, on the website, there's a little thing at the top where it says be a guest. And you can fill that out and it gets sent to my email and I'll pass it on to these guys so you don't even have to talk to us.
That'd be great. We actually do also have an email if you want to send us some stuff. It's craftedforyoupodcast@gmail.com.
Cool. I think that's all of that. The 21st century, man. You got to tell people so many things.
It's everything.
You
got to
plug it all. You can reach us anywhere.
Anywhere.
I'll start giving out my phone number if you want to reach me.
We just want to talk to you guys. We want to be your friends.
I don't have any friends.
Short little story. We were just in Raleigh over the weekend. And we talked to a vendor there, and we're like, "Hey, we're a beer podcast in Greensboro." And he's like, "Oh, what's your name?" And we're like, "Crafted for You." He's like, "That's so weird." And he showed us his phone, and he's actually subscribed to us, and he listens to us.
So thank you, thank you so much. That's incredible.
That's
incredible.
That's very awesome.
Cool. So, well, take it easy, guys. And how do we sign it off? Cheers.
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 Cheers.